It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. For most of us, when we go to the store or order something online, we don't think about how the products got from the manufacturer or the warehouse to that local store or maybe our front porch. But chances are those items were hauled on trucks, and at least for the moment, that means truck drivers. And right now we're facing a serious shortage of long-haul truck drivers in the United States. That's bad news. This hour we're going to talk about why there's a shortage, what it means for our economy, and what might be done about it. Were you aware of the shortage of truck drivers? Why do you think we're having this problem? Truck drivers, we'd really like to hear from you this hour. Is this the career you'd recommend to others? Why or why not? Maybe you're considering a career as a truck driver. If so, what would sweeten the deal for you? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is Steve Viselli, a sociology lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania who studies work, labor markets, and public policy related to freight transportation, automation, and energy. He's also the author of The Big Rig, Trucking and the Decline of the American Dream. Steve Viselli, welcome to the Morning Show.
Thanks, John. It's great to be on.
Well, let's put this truck driver shortage in perspective for us. What are the numbers we're facing? How bad is it?
Yeah, so we've been experiencing a shortage now for several years, but it's now reached the point where the American Trucking Association says it's about 50,000 workers, and they project it to get to around 150,000 workers within the next 6 or 7 years. And most of that is concentrated in that long-haul segment, as you mentioned before, and specifically what's called for-hire truckloads. So these are, you know, trucks that are hauling 40,000 pounds of stuff between manufacturing plants or import centers to distribution centers. So these aren't local truck drivers who would be taking stuff out to stores or hauling things locally around a particular area. These are long-distance truck drivers.
Okay, so do we have about the same number of truck drivers in decades past, but now we need more of them, or are we just losing drivers?
Well, we need more every year because the economy is growing and the population's growing. But there's usually pretty tight capacity constraint in truck driving, so in trucking. So you don't have a lot more trucks than you need. And so if you have, you know, fairly sustained growth as we've had the last couple of years, you know, you can end up with a shortage because you're just not bringing in enough workers every year. In this case, what we have is a lot of truck driving companies that have not invested in their workforce. And so we've had really high turnover. And right now we actually have, you know, something like 10 million folks out there with a commercial driver's license and about 3.5 million jobs that require one for full-time driving. Now, there are lots of jobs that where you also have folks who need, you know, commercial driver's licenses, but what we have is probably several million people who've tried out the trucking industry over the last several decades and decided it wasn't for them. And so, you know, a big part of what trucking companies have to do now is, you know, get some of those folks who may have gone back into construction or manufacturing or even service work to come back into the industry.
So how important is trucking to the U.S. economy? I read someplace that seems to me the number is close to 80% of all the freight in the United States is handled by trucks.
Yeah, that's right. So just about everything that you and I will consume directly is brought on a truck and sometimes moved multiple times in the, you know, process of getting produced or moved around to the stores where we'll actually get to it. The stuff that's not going by truck is going by rail or pipeline or something like that, and that's going to be, you know, coal and oil and things like that. So trucks are really essential for just about all of the consumer items that you and I buy. And overall, the logistics system that trucks participate in is about 8% of GDP, and trucking itself is about 4% of GDP.
That's a huge number. I think, isn't it close to like $800 billion a year that this industry is worth to the economy?
Yeah, that's about right. And you know, we've got 1.8 million heavy truck drivers, which is where the shortage really is. Another, and that 3.5 million is broader, you know, driving and delivery jobs. And in many states, the truck driving is one of the largest occupations. Like, by some measures, it is the largest single occupation in 27 or 29, I believe, of the 50 states.
Well, you know, we really don't think about how our stuff gets to wherever it is we're going to buy it, whether we buy it online and it gets delivered to the front porch, or we go to the local grocery store and pick up that head of lettuce that was probably grown in California or someplace like that. We just don't think about how it gets to where we are. How is this impacting commerce in the United States? And are consumers already starting to feel the effects of the shortage?
They are. We're starting to see freight rates go up. In fact, they've been going up now for months. They're some of the spot markets, as it's called, which is what you're going to pay to move stuff quickly, you know, without a contract, pre-existing contract, are near historic highs. And so those costs are going to be passed on to consumers, you know, eventually, sometimes pretty quickly. And we're starting to see that. We're also seeing some higher fuel prices as well. So the combination of higher labor prices to get drivers into the seats, as well as fuel prices, and then a little extra profit sometimes for those trucking companies who have capacity when it's scarce. That's all going to be passed on to consumers eventually.
Well, I see that the cost of Amazon Prime has already gone up. Is that in part because of this trucking shortage?
Yeah, so there's an interesting cause and effect question right now about how much you know, Amazon's being affected by increased freight rates and how much they're causing increased freight rates because of the growth in e-commerce. Of course, Amazon being the largest single chunk of that. We're really changing the way that we're moving stuff in our economy, and you know, as folks get stuff delivered to their home more often, right? We're taking all that time and you know, transportation of yourself to the store to go and pick out goods. We're turning that into jobs, right? So we have more stuff moving, you know, in smaller amounts, faster, and so there's more delivery happening in our economy. For every unit of stuff that we sell. So, you know, that's definitely a big part of it, and Amazon is a major consumer of trucking services and may soon be one of the largest providers since they're beginning to build their own fleet of trucks.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We're talking with Steve Viselli, sociologist, who's looked at this truck driver shortage. And we have a truck driver with us on the phone. Let's go to Frank in Green Bay. Frank, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning.
So you're a truck driver. What do you think? What's causing this shortage? What's been your experience as a driver, and would you recommend someone going into that field?
I'm relatively new into the industry. Retired 7 years ago. I was a firefighter, and ever since then have been trying different jobs. And now I got into truck driving.
Okay. And what's that like?
And it's been painful, very painful for me.
What's painful about it?
Well, I'm pushing, I am 60 years old, and driving a semi over the road at my age, at least starting at my age, it's just tough. It's just tough. Being away from home and the pay scale for a new driver, it's just not there. Do I enjoy the work? I enjoy the work, yes. But it's just tough. It's tough, tough, tough. And I don't know, maybe if you start at a younger age, maybe that does help. But it's still, it's a tough racket to be in.
Frank, thanks for your call. Steve Viselli, you actually spent time in a rig driving, and you talked to a lot of truck drivers. Is Frank's experience pretty common?
It is. So first of all, a lot of folks do get into it as a second or third career, right? They may have worked in any number of occupations, but oftentimes, you know, construction, manufacturing are quite common for as previous careers of truck drivers. And it is tough. It is a very difficult lifestyle that you have to live to be out on the road. I spent 6 months training and then working as a long-haul driver to get a sense of it before I started interviewing drivers. And, you know, it's not uncommon to work typically over 80 hours a week. When you count all the waiting time and things like that, you're out on the road for a driver like Frank, who's relatively new to the industry,
Steve,
probably about 2 to 3 weeks.
Steve, I'm going to have you hold it right there. I want to come back and revisit this. We have to break for the news right now. We're talking with Steve Viselli, sociologist and author of The Big Rig, Trucking and the Decline of the American Dream. We're talking about the trucking shortage in America. 800-642-1234, the number to call. We will continue our discussion with Steve Viselli and with you if you care to join us right after this news. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. America faces a serious shortage of truck drivers, and that's a big problem for our economy. That's what we're talking about this hour on The Morning Show. What do you see as some of the reasons for this shortage? And truck drivers, we want to hear from you. Is this the career you'd recommend to others? What do you like or dislike about it? Maybe you're considering a career in truck driving, and if so, what would sweeten the deal for you? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org is the email address, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest, Steve Viselli, is a sociologist at the University of Pennsylvania who studies work, labor markets, and public policy related to freight transportation, automation, and energy. He's also the author of The Big Rig, Trucking and the Decline of the American Dream. Steve, just before the break, we had heard from Frank in Green Bay, who talked about the long hours and low pay for truck drivers, and we were kind of following up on that with, okay, so what's it like to be a truck driver, and what are some of the problems with it? I'd like you to finish that thought, and then we've got a bunch more callers who want to join us.
Okay, great. Yeah, you know, most new drivers, like someone like Frank, will be out 2 to 3 weeks at a time. You know, you're living out of the truck, living at truck stops when you're not, you know, actually driving or at a customer location picking up or delivering. Again, the hours can be in excess of 80 per week when you count all of that waiting time that you're going to do while, you know, the truck is loaded and unloaded, or you need to be dispatched, you don't have a load yet. And so you're just, you know, it can be very fatiguing, as Frank was saying, especially for older workers. There's a lot of issues with sitting so much, right? Eating truck stop food, breathing diesel exhaust 24 hours a day. So there are lots of health consequences, as well as, you know, just the time away from family and friends and social life. And it can be really, really tough. And that's the reason we have so much turnover in this long haul segment in particular. And a lot of drivers, you know, looking for the first opportunity they can get to get a local driving job. And so it's these long-haul companies that really struggle to keep workers in the seats of these trucks.
And I want to make sure, I read several articles about this and some other research in preparation for the show, and one number that kind of just really jumped off the page at me is that the turnover appears to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about 90%. That just sounds like a really crazy number.
Yeah, so it's often hard for folks who aren't familiar with the industry to believe the way that the labor market works in it, which is that a lot of these big companies, and they have since really deregulation of the industry in 1980, they compete on, you know, how many hours you can get workers to work and how cheaply you can get them to work them. That's how some segments of the industry work. And as a result, they can have well in excess of 100% annual turnover, meaning that they're training a new worker for each position in the company every year. Now, you know, you have some workers who will stay with a particular company a little bit longer, but the typical long-haul truck driver going into a big company, one of these long-haul companies, will last about 6 months before they leave that company and most likely leave the industry.
Wow. That's crazy. Let's take another call. Greg is with us from Wilmington, North Carolina. Greg, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Good morning. Yeah, I was just talking with the lady here about I was looking into doing a like a hot shot read because right now I drive for a company. I drive cross country, and I drive to like North Carolina now to Minnesota, drop a truck off. I fly home. You know, I spend 3 or 4 days on the road, and I fly back home, and that's great. But I like the where I do round trips where my wife, I actually can take, my wife has dementia, and I get to take her with me. But I'm looking into getting into a hotshot rig. I wonder what is his.
What's a hotshot rig? What's a hotshot rig, Greg? What does that term mean?
It's like a dually pickup with a long trailer to haul like up to 30,000 pounds.
Hmm. Steve, do you know anything about that?
You know, I do see them out there. I occasionally meet drivers who work for small companies. You know, bringing specialized freight. Usually on some of these, gooseneck trailers or specialized trailers. So they may
fifth
have
wheel.
A fifth wheel on that dually truck. And so, you know, to be honest, I don't know how well it pays. I think there's a lot of variety in that. And it really is a sort of specialized small company operation. So I think it'd be a kind of situation where you'd have to really do a lot of homework to find, you know, and talk with someone who is running one of those companies that might be of interest. Definitely a different model than the big truckload carriers that are really having the shortage of drivers.
Greg, you in your discussion with our call screener, you mentioned that there are lots of restrictions and you wish there were less. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, not really. The ELD system is a great system. I like it because I don't have to fill out a log. It electronically does that. But, like, I was in New York a while back, and they got pulled over for not having a rear plate. Well, being from North Carolina, North Carolina DOT reads our plates from the front. So we have all our plates mounted on the front. I got a ticket for not having a rear plate. You know, different states have different regulations, and they need to get something together, you know, where here in one state you don't get, a ticket for doing what you do in your state. You know what I mean? We travel, like I say, across country. I went from Wilmington, North Carolina to New York, was pulled over by a New York police officer, told me he's giving me a ticket for not having a rear plate. But normally I would have a trailer that has a rear plate, but this particular day it was a kind of an emergency job. I had to get a generator to a place, a vineyard. And, stuff like that just kind of holds you up, kills time and everything, you know?
Okay. Greg, thanks thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for your call. Steve Aselli, how big a problem is this patchwork of regulations across the country that Greg is referring to?
Yeah, the issue here is really that it's drivers like Greg that end up paying the price, you know. So whether it's, you know, different regulations, or maybe it's a customer who overloaded the trailer and put too much weight on it, and the driver might not have any control over that until they get to scale that load. Well, I've, you know, met drivers who get pulled over between the scale and the shipper's location, and they're, you know, the trailer's overweight, and they get a hefty fine for it. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are out of the driver's control, whether it's a regulation on where the plate is, the weight of the trailer, or it's just congestion, traffic congestion, which, of course, we all know is increasing, or shippers who, you know, waste the driver's time at the dock. And most of these drivers are paid by the mile. And so they're only paid when they're basically traveling at high speeds. And so all those inefficiencies of, you know, how the customers treat the drivers or something like that, or traffic congestion, they really come out of the driver's paycheck and oftentimes translate into, as Greg said, lots of waiting time and more hours. And so that can be really frustrating and really turns a lot of people off from the industry, because it's really set up to kind of shift the cost of the inefficiency onto the driver, rather than people, you know, higher up who have control over it, taking ownership over some of these problems. They want flexible labor, and that's one of the reasons the job, you know, really most people don't stay in it.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Eau Claire, and Pete is with us. Pete, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just talking to your secretary there. Yeah, I've been out here for a little over 40 years, and I've seen a few changes. I actually started hauling milk bulk pickup when I was in high school from the farms here in Wisconsin. That's changed because the farms, we don't have very many small farms anymore, so it's all big tankers and whatnot. But when I first started over the road after the milk job, it was after what they call deregulation, and still kind of some wild times out there. I know, certain truck stops you could go through to find, as the CP handles call it, the road aspirin, which were amphetamines. I can remember I bought a couple shotguns and a rifle one Sunday morning in a truck stop in Hubbard, and I imagine they helped keep my sleeper warm, but I didn't ask any questions. And those wild times, I think, have passed by. And like some of your other callers, that over-the-road driving, you're gone 2-3 weeks at a time. I can remember I was probably out 2 to 3 months sometimes, never saw Wisconsin, much less my home. So it is a tough gig. And like the previous caller said, when you're being paid by the mile and you spend a lot of time sitting waiting for freight or other reasons, you're not making any money. Right now, I'm working for a small company out of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, that's construction related. They got a bunch of dump trucks, some heavy hauls, and then I pull what's called a pneumatic tanker. I haul Portland cement. I'm getting paid $20 an hour, and I get overtime. In the summertime, we're busy. I'm pushing 60 hours a week. So I'm making $1,300, $1,400, $1,500 a week, and I'm home every night. A truck driver's dream. Stealing candy from a baby.
So that's a much better situation for you than the one you had. Pete, thanks so much for that call. Steve, is Pete's experience pretty typical? Got started doing some small jobs locally and then got into over-the-road trucking. How different is the truck driving industry today than it was, say, 30 years ago?
Well, those local jobs, and many of them still are. So Pete is, typical driver who, they have a lot of experience. I'm guessing,
Steve, we're kind of losing your call here. Maybe you could move a little bit and we'd get a little better cell reception here.
Okay. Can you hear me now, John?
Yeah, I can hear you now. So Pete's experience, he's been driving for 40 years. He started driving short-haul milk trucks, picking up milk at dairy farms and taking it to the creamery. Then he went into long-haul rigs, and now he's back to driving locally and making a lot more money. So this idea that these drivers are paid by the mile, is that something that's more recent? Were they paid differently in the past? Is that something that's changed?
It's been going on for a long time. Pete mentioned deregulation, and that was really the big change in long-haul trucking. Before that, most drivers were unionized. They were Teamsters members. Their pay and working conditions were set through a nationwide collective bargaining agreement. Since that time, truck drivers' wages have dropped roughly 50%. So these local drivers like Pete, who have a lot of safe miles behind them, are very experienced. They're highly valued, can easily make $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year and be home every night. Whereas these new drivers coming in are, again, the companies are really competing on how little they can pay them. So, those folks may be working, again, 80 hours plus a week, be away from home, and sometimes be lucky to take home 40 in that first year. And when you do the math on that, a lot of these drivers are making near minimum wage. And so they don't stick with it. And so that, Pete's part of a generation of truck drivers that's now getting closer to retirement. And, they haven't been replaced by a younger generation of workers who are really committed long term to the industry because of the way they've been treated by a lot of these big over the road companies.
Pete, thanks for your call. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. We have a shortage of long-haul truck drivers in the United States. This is a big deal. Wondering what you think about it. 800-642-1234. Let's take a call from Gary in Merrill. Gary, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Yes, good morning. I was in the trucking industry, too. All my life, I was fortunate in that I was in the union, so we did have some protection there. We could grieve any problems that came up. But there's only, there's probably less than 10% of the drivers that are in the union now. One thing I'll get into, electronic logs. The government started mandating electronic logs in all the big over-the-road trucks starting the first of the year. So you start your day, you clock on, your clock starts, you got 14 hours of total work time, 11 hours of drive time. So you could unload in the city, say New York City, and load in New York City, and with road construction, rush hour traffic, it could take you 6-7 hours. You get out of the city, you fuel the truck. All that is on the clock. The clock never stops once you start it for the day. And you could get out of the city. You might have 450 miles to go by the next morning. And you can't take a rest. You can't stop and sleep for a couple hours because that the clock is still ticking. And if you got 400 miles to go or so by the next morning, you have to drive no matter how tired you are. You have to keep going because once you take your break, it's a mandated 10-hour break. The clock times the 10 hours. So you can't take a break, so you have to keep going. If no matter what you do, the truck has to keep going to get to that appointment by the next morning. And it just makes the level of anxiety and frustration with these drivers through the roof. That's why they have like a 90% turnover rate at these big companies, because nobody can take it. Another thing, a guy can be gone from home for 8 days, coming home up to Merrill to see his family for the weekend. The clock runs him out of hours. 60 miles from his house, he's got his wife and children waiting for him on a Saturday morning. He has to take a mandated 10-hour break before he can complete that 60 miles. So it just makes things outrageously bad for the drivers.
Okay. Gary, we're getting close to news time, so we're going to let you go here. I want Steve to respond quickly before we have to take a break. Steve, very well, actually, you know what? We're going to have you respond to what Gary said after the news break, because it's too close. We're talking about America's truck driver shortage this hour with sociologist Steve Viselli. And you, if you care to join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Oh, and I see I misread the clock. So, Steve, very quickly respond to Gary's point about the regulations and all this electronic logging. You've got about 45 seconds.
Yeah, so we deregulated the economics of the industry and really created a lot of competition. And what that did was, you know, force these companies to work drivers harder and harder. And so we started to have to regulate the safety of it. And, you know, again, as Gary said, it's stressful. It puts all the costs and the problems on the back of the driver. And so they're rushing through congestion. They're driving tired because they're limited by these hours, and they got to get the load there, make money, and hopefully get home. And that's what they're trying to do. And it can be very, very stressful.
Gary, thanks so much for your call. And we have other callers who want to join us. We're going to take a break and check the news. And then when we come back, Steve Viselli will be with us. He's a sociologist who's studied the trucking industry and written a book about it. And we're hearing from him today and from you. 800-642-1234. Email address is ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at The Morning Show. Or at WPR Mornings, I'm sorry, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. With me today, sociologist Steve Viselli. And we're talking about the shortage of truck drivers in America and what that means for all of us. What do you see as some of the reasons for this driver shortage? Truck drivers, we would like to hear from some more of you. Is this a career you'd recommend to others? What do you like and not like about it? Maybe you're considering a career in truck driving. If so, what would sweeten the deal for you? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Steve, quickly before we go back to the phones, how do we return some of the luster to this profession? How do we attract new blood to the trucking industry? What needs to happen?
Well, I think we need to start paying drivers for all the time that they work. So, again, that frustration of being out there on the road, you know, not being paid while you're waiting at docks, not being paid to be out on the road overnight, things like that. You know, they tell a driver that you don't care about their time, but they also, you know, make that time free for the employer and for the customer, and that means it's going to be used inefficiently. And so until we get drivers paid for all the time that they're working, we're not going to be able to make this a job that is really high quality.
800-642-1234, the number to call. Let's take another call here. We'll start with Tim in Green Bay. Tim, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I sure like your program and your guys hitting everything right on the head. One of the issues I've had, though, and I'm a pretty small guy. I'm 5'9". I weigh 130 pounds. But I've had three back surgeries over the years. The last one was fused, and employers, they just don't like hiring drivers that have that. Even though if you have a return to work with no restrictions, I stay away from companies that don't do any unloading or anything. I've had employers tell me outright I'm refused employment. I've had people throw my application away, and the state didn't do anything about it. But I sure like driving truck. I still have my CDL. Lately, for the last 3.5 years, I've been taking care of my mom literally around the clock because she has cancer, dementia, and all these health issues. So that's kind of where I'm establishing my own work record right now. And we're all going to die sometime. But when something happens to my mom, I want to go back to driving truck because I do like that a lot, and it's cross country.
Okay. Tim, thanks. What about Tim's situation, Steve? Is that pretty typical? Once you've had back surgery, companies don't want you?
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to pass a physical to get the CDL, but even after that, employers will look at, a whole range of different stuff from health issues, employment history, et cetera. And, it's not the easiest job to get back into when you have a history of a workplace injury. And I guess, it's a hard job physically. A lot of people think about it as sort of, just kind of cruising on the highway or something like that, like it's a glorified road trip or something. It is very physically stressful to be a driver because you are sitting for a long period of time. And so the potential for repetitive stress injuries, but also back, hip, and other kinds of injuries from that position and the amount of time you spend in it can be debilitating for a lot of workers, unfortunately. But all the best to Tim. I hope he can, find a company that values his experience.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for the call. You alluded to something earlier, and you mentioned it in your book, that when you were driving, there were a lot of things you didn't really notice until you weren't driving. So, for example, you didn't really notice all the diesel fumes that you were subject to in the truck and at the truck stops and everywhere. But then when you got home or you got someplace where there weren't any and you put your clothes away or something and you walked back in the room and it just about knocked you out. Talk about that, some of the things that we really wouldn't really think about.
Yeah, so I mean, I hear about this a lot from drivers. Just you're stuck with that truck, and so you're stuck with everything that comes along with it. And part of that is the health consequences of those diesel fumes. And a lot of times we hear criticism of trucks and truck drivers around idling and other sorts of behavior that folks don't like, and they're maybe in their neighborhood or on the outskirts of their city or wherever it might be. And we rarely think about the drivers and the effect that this job has on them. And it's a really tough job, again, for sort of sitting, the truck stop food and other things. But you're never away from an idling. When you're doing this long haul driving, you're never away from idling diesel engines. And they're, we know that these have health consequences. They're getting cleaner. I mean, we have rules in place now that make sure that the newer trucks coming out you know, emit fewer pollutants. But still, these are, you know, important health, you know, worker health issues that rarely get enough attention. And when you look at the health consequences for drivers, everything from obesity, heart disease, sleep apnea, and other kinds of issues that come along with this occupation, they take a big toll. And so it's not surprising that, you know, drivers are less likely to stay in these kind of long haul jobs, because they can see that. They see it every day, the consequences of what this lifestyle are.
We've got just about full phone lines here. Let's take a call next from Pete, who's calling us from Minneapolis. Pete, good morning. Pete, are you with us? Yeah, go ahead, Pete.
Yep. Yeah, about your getting new drivers in the industry, we need to think, well, first of all, they need to pay their dues. You can't come out of the gate after 6 months of training and expect to get 40 cents a mile. They're getting paid 21 cents a mile. They need to pay their dues like I did. I've been out here for 18 years, been driving OTR for 10, paid my dues. That's all you got to do. I've been pulling a flatbed, love it, making $70,000 to $80,000 a year. Get new drivers in here, they need to realize this is a lifestyle, not a job. That's the two differences of a steering wheel holder and a professional driver.
Okay, Pete, thanks for that. Pete is somebody who's very happy in the truck driving industry and is making pretty good money. How typical is his experience, and what's the difference between a beginner and how do they advance in the industry?
Yeah, well, Pete's been in it long enough that, you know, maybe he, you know, had a better company when he first started out. There is, you know, there is the paying the dues kind of approach to things, which, you know, that's part of the issue is, you know, folks don't want to pay the dues. They don't want to not be around their family for weeks at a time, you know, for what is oftentimes just a $10 an hour job when you count all the hours. And so, you know, that's part of the problem the industry has, is that, you know, people don't want to give up, you know, time with their kids, time with family for weeks at a time. Some of the new companies, you know, and I would, you know, suggest maybe to drivers like Pete that things have changed for the worse in some of these entry level companies. We've got lots of companies that have training contracts that basically hold you to working for one company. For a year, or else you owe them, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 plus 20% interest. That's a, you know, common sort of contract requirement if they're going to train you. That means that you're trapped there, and they can pay you really low wages, oftentimes not even minimum wage. We get lots of drivers who are misclassified employees who, when they, you know, get tired of working, you know, for that company for 6 or 9 months and want to leave the company, you know, talks them into buying their own rig. You know, doesn't pay them any. Now, there's still lots of good opportunities out there. I mean, they're tough, but they're good opportunities for individual owner operators to, you know, start companies. It's not it's a competitive environment, but somebody with experience can do it. Now, a lot of these drivers who are coming in owning their own rigs have no experience at all. Sometimes right out of training, they're convinced to buy a truck before they really know what's happening in the industry. And so a lot of those workers, you know, can make far less than minimum wage. I've worked as a consultant for a couple of lawsuits, and we have workers who, you know, won't get paid every third week because, you know, once they pay the truck expenses and things like that, if they go home at all, even for 2 or 3 days, you know, after being out maybe 3 or 4 weeks, they won't make any take-home pay at all.
Steve, we're just about out of time. One thing I wanted to be sure to get to, we're looking at a possible future where self-driving cars are the norm, and there's also talk about self-driving trucks. Is this an area, you've done some research on this. So very quickly, talk to us about the technology that could be coming sometime in the future that might change the industry.
Yeah, I'm currently working on a book on the topic, and we're going to see it in the southwest of the United States within the next few years on the I-10 corridor, trucks driving what's called exit to exit, meaning that, you know, a local truck with a human driver brings it out to the interstate, and then a self-driving truck moves it, you know, a few hundred miles or so to the next exit where a human driver picks up that trailer again. it's going to have really limited applications, and you know, we're decades away. It's not anywhere near a near-term solution for this driver shortage.
But there are some changes. The technology is with a driver, the kind of a driver assist kind of situation. That would that make the driving easier on the truck drivers?
No, I'm concerned about it. I think we can get some safety benefits, but if we had a truck where the was doing the long haul miles while the driver was in the back or something like that, kind of a human driver team, I think you'd just end up working drivers even more hours and paying.
Okay.
To be honest.
So what needs to happen? What's your best advice for a truck driver, for trucking companies and for policymakers going forward here? We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, we've got to really start to value these drivers and want to keep them. And so the first thing we got to do is stop subsidizing all the turnover in the industry. We've got a lot of government training grants that go to workers. And we're letting these companies have these poor labor practices, and we're subsidizing that turnover by training new workers for them. So we've got to make sure that we're getting a return from those training grants, that when a worker takes that time and money to invest in a career, that they then have a career path that is going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to eliminate some of these abusive training contracts and the worker misclassification, which is rampant throughout these segments of the industry.
Okay.
And ensure that these drivers are really getting a good return for the effort that they're putting in, which, again, is far beyond what most people would expect.
Steve, we've got to leave it there. We're out of time. But thanks so much for joining us. Steve Viselli is a sociology lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania who studies work, labor markets, and public policy related to freight transportation, automation, and energy. He's the author of The Big Rig, Trucking and the Decline of the American Dream. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.